Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
MC here from MCMA Podcast. We have another episode with us today, and Crystal's with us today. How are you doing, Crystal?
I'm doing good. I'm catching up on some light reading.
Ah, light reading adds into what today's show is about? Is that what's going on?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, for further ado, today's show is going to be Gravity Falls, and we're going to be exploring Gravity Falls in its plot line. So that's the main title, and we're going to do the concept of the show, the characters, the hidden codes and the ciphers, what the show was then, and what the show is now. There are the before and after. I don't know how it held up and all that stuff.
As a spoiler to how it held up, I think this should tell you if it has or not.
Gotcha. So, let's go with the concept of Gravity Fall before we jump to the characters themselves.
I would say the concept of the show is, I would say, fairly simple for when it came out. Your main characters are two twin siblings, Dipper and Mabel Pines, as they're sent to their great uncle's place in Gravity Falls, Oregon, for the summer. There, that is where they discover this mysterious journal with the mysterious six fingers and three on it, containing all sorts of cryptics and all sorts of spooks.
So the six fingers with the number three, what's the significance of that symbol throughout Gravity Falls?
Technically, the symbol itself implies that this is the third edition of the journal. So there are at least two other journals out there, and one of them is owned by a villain, and the other one is owned by a good guy?
Hello.
And when all three journals come together, it can power some unbelievable machine that is hidden somewhere in town. I'm minimizing spoilers, by the way.
Oh, okay. So, what's the significance of three instead of the other two?
What was the question?
What does three allow the grandchildren to do in the scheme of the book?
Let's say, in terms of which one, I think they said three was the tamest of the journals. Two's got the powerful spells, and I think one was the beginning of it. Unfortunately, we can't say because they never released the other two journals.
Oh, so just lore kind of thing.
Yep. Sentry saying, this town is not just normal, it's paranormal. To the point where you can find an 8.5 president of the United States he sounds like he'd be a great candidate today.
Well. And what's the genre of the show you think it is?
This is a mystery genre. Probably one of the first mystery genres in kids shows to be taken extremely seriously.
Okay.
After all, there are several episodes that make me question, how was this allowed on television?
Like what?
We got blood, we got terrifying scenes, we got eldritch horrors, and sometimes they don't sugarcoat it. For ages 7 up!
Well, I think it was a little grotesque, so it was pretty mild compared to other stuff that's out there. And also, it might be some jump scares or creepy moments, but most of the time, a whimsical nature approach will let you get by with that creepy nature. Would you say that Gravity Falls does it in a whimsical kind of way?
I mean, it definitely left an impact.
Well, you know how Beetlejuice is, right? It has
the movies?
The first movie.
My only knowledge of Beetlejuice is the animated series, and that's bare minimum, but
gotcha. That
was rated PG, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but in that setting, they were able to bring on a ghost-like character who had a creepy tracker, but very unique and whimsical approach, and the animation of Gravity Falls certainly feels into that similar nature. So
I can see that. The style definitely reflects that. The only time when they add more details to something is when it's the monster of the week.
Well, even the monster of the week doesn't look terrifying.
Depends on the season.
I mean, even the most terrifying monster is still not the most terrifying thing out there.
Maybe that's why 10 years later, one of the episodes still scares the daylights out of me. I need a bigger backbone.
Larry just scales it.
Yeah, that works too.
So, with the segment of Gravity Falls, where did it fall in line on the programming?
I'd say
which show came before, which show came after?
Well, the show initially premiered in June of 2012. So, it technically was the first of its kind to be a kids show that was to be taken seriously by both kids and adults. Said you need to benefit from rewatching it because, oh, you might see something you might have missed. A 618 over there, a time travel over there, a code over there, the key for the cipher at the end of the episode over there.
Okay.
Not a ton of shows, I think, have or attempted to try something like this. There are some that try, but I don't think we're going to get any that are going to match Gravity Falls in terms of what they leave behind to benefit reruns.
Oh, interesting. So how are we introduced to the character? How do they play the part that makes Gravity Falls unique and mystery and mysterious?
First episode does a pretty good job of introducing you to the characters by jumping you right into the action and then jumping back to get you properly introduced to our characters. It's like, oh, there's action coming. Wait, we gotta learn about these guys first? Okay, I can learn about these characters first, then we get some action.
So we jump into the main conflict, then we get the introduction later.
Yeah, cold open, then theme song, then start from the beginning, explain how they got in that situation.
Well, classic storytelling.
I mean, it was done also in the original pilot that was made back in 2009 or 10.
And did you watch the pilot?
I'm going to say yes, because it actually was made available back in 2016because of a ARG they did after the show ended. So, yes, I have seen the pilot.
How did that differ from the first episode?
The style is obviously different. The pilot is 12 minutes as opposed to the episode being 22 minutes. There aren't any hidden codes, hidden time travelers, etc. And it's only, we only have like three actors in it. And one of them is the creator. So left with one question for Alex Hirsch. How in the world does he come up with all those voices?
What, in the show?
Yep, he voices. These are the core ones that he voices. I might not be guessing all of them. He voices the caretaker of the twins, Grunkle Stan. He voices the handyman at the Mystery Shack, Seuss. He voices the main antagonist of the whole thing, Bill Cipher. He voices a one-off character that quickly became very important later, Old Man McGucket, and there are quite a number of others.
Interesting. Maybe he's the talented voice actor that we met him as well.
Very talented. The joke that we have is, we need a voice for this random character. Outsource, got it.
But that's the joke. That's the Jordan joke again.
Yep, it's something that gets joked. In fact, the first monster of the week that you encounter in both the pilot and in the official episode is also voiced by Hirsch.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of two different voices for that one.
Gotcha. So who are the main characters?
Well, I happen to have one of them right here. Our main characters are the main characters that we follow throughout the series is actually 212. They would turn 13 at the end of summer. Twin siblings, Dipper and Mabel Pines. They are fun to watch, especially interacting.
Right. Some of their background.
But for one, Alex Hirsch based a lot of the show off of his own childhood experiences and what he wanted his summer vacation to be like with his own twin sister. So Alex Hirsch is what inspired Dipper Pines, and Ariel Post, his sister, would inspire Mabel Pines. And they're both equally different in their own way. But their family and have to, their family and learn to love each other just the same.
So what's the personality of each one?
You have the dorky investigator in Dipper, who tries to act tough, but realistically he is like 2 seconds away from panicking. And the lovable to the point of ignoring reality, Mabel Pines, who makes a new sweater every single day. We counted 109 sweaters in 40 episodes.
That's good.
A lot of sweaters. I'm still questioning where she got all that yarn from.
I don't know. You never know. The continuity twist.
Yeah, and then and that's not even including the one she makes in season 2, which can either play music or have lights. I don't even want to know how she made those.
Well, amplification of electronics and fabric is pretty easy. You get a basic chip style and make sound and put it somewhere where I can play it. But that's a different topic. But that's the twin. What is the grandpa like?
Certainly reflects, because they actually did that. I think they did that because they wanted her to have a different sweater every episode. There are exceptions where she wears a duplicate, but it's more than like this is established to show that it's during the same day of a previous episode. Hmm. So, except for the Grunkle Stan?
Uh-huh.
Boy, how long you got?
Hold on a little bit.
All joking aside, he is the man of mystery for the first season, and technically the second half of the second season. Voiced by Alex Hirsch, he's the caretaker of Dipper and Mabel while they're in Gravity Falls, Oregon. A tough man and also a scam artist, also a con man, he will do anything and everything to get everything out of your wallet. And this guy's supposed to be the good guy. There was one discovered early on that said Stan is not what he seems, and that made us question, okay, can we trust this guy or not?
Interesting.
Oh, that's what they need. Okay, so dedicate an entire 25-minute episode to tell us how all that works.
Okay. How does the shop implement in setting?
The setting, the main place of refuge that most of the stories will either start or end at is Grunkle Stan's house, the Mystery Shack, which is a tourist trap that he made his house into to get more money.
Okay.
Also, how you get introduced to two of the other characters that, depending on the episode, would depend on if they play a role or not. The two workers, Zeus and Wendy.
How are they differential from each other?
Zeus is the other Alex Hirsch character that's voiced, and he is a lovable. He's smart when he wants to be, but he's just a lovable dork. Think of it as an older Dipper with confidence and likes to be comics. Okay. He would be, if he was alive, he would be a guest star on this podcast.
He would.
Yes, he would.
And you honestly believe that you are endorsing to be on here.
Hey.
Aha. We'll see. Why are you so special?
Sorry, what?
Why are they so special, then?
For one, I did not understand the question, but apparently
special in your mind?
Well, that will require me to go into this. That we can explain in the cipher in this code and cipher section. So, put that pin in that question. We'll save it for later.
All right. How about Wendy? What's she like?
She's interested. The cool, laid-back teenager, technically 15 in the series, and she is Dipper's first crush. I'll give you 5 guesses how that goes.
Well, yeah. Most of the series, he's trying to get with Dipper.
Yeah. The crush does go to get friend-zoned in season 2, but for season 1, it was used for about 4 to 5 episodes in about 20.
Okay.
Don't get me started with the cloning episode. This man literally cloned himself 11 times. He got one paper jam just to try to make sure his date with Wendy, date in quotation marks, goes swimmingly.
Oh, very precise, very...
I'm wondering how much trouble the voice actor had to deal with for that episode. You have to voice 10 additional versions of the same character, and including the paper jam version? I hope he got paid for all that.
It wasn't the same voice.
It was all done by the same voice actor. So technically, this show is not a stranger to be using voice actors. But if they're going to, it's going to have a significant connection, or it's going to be Alex Hirsch.
Well, my question is, was the different information in Flex Pacebird different tones in their voice?
Except for the paper jam one, no. The only way you can tell the difference between them is actually visual. They are slightly more toned down colors because they came out of a copier, and they have a number on their hat to represent which clone they are.
But when he didn't notice the number, I'm guessing?
Like, you just got to look up at the hat and say, oh, that's number 5. Oh, that's number 10. Wait, where did numbers 3 and 4 go? They're still alive. Dang it.
Fall.
It's one thing I like about this show. Sometimes plot points leave stuff open to interpretation, and it's like, fine, just go make it the way we just take a plot hole that doesn't get completely resolved by the end of the episode and run with it. Like, where in the world did that copying machine came from? They did not even try to explain where that came from.
It's just there. You don't just assume it's not there anymore.
It's just, the fandom will probably come up with an explanation later. Or they already have.
Is there any other side character that's also important to the show?
Side characters? I would bring up Old Man McGucket.
Okay. What's he about?
He is introduced in episode 2 as it's the Scooby-Doo villain kind of episode, and he is portrayed as the villain, but he's not really a bad guy. He's just a misunderstood old man that has had memory issues since the 80s.
Okay.
The reason I bring him up is for a long time, I want to say about a year or so within while the show was airing, people thought that McGucket was the author of the journals. Since the theory of who was the author of the journals was circulating around until at least 2014, 2015, when they confirmed who the author really was. Alex Hirsch, the madman, decided, oh, the fandom actually knows too much information about what we're doing in season 2, so I'm going to drop a fake leak of McGucket writing in the journals to get them to send the fan base down that path where we work on this path.
So McGucket was the author.
It's proof. He was so paranoid about fans finding out about something. The official name for the first part of the finale episode, Weird Baguette, is done in a cipher to prevent anyone from figuring out what was actually happening or if it got leaked.
Was he successful in that, or was we just?
I would say he was successful. He threw fans off of the league of who the author of the journal was by making it McGucket, looking like it's McGucket, then debunking it 7 episodes into season 2.
Oh, okay.
I didn't 100% debunk it. McGucket was an assistant to the author, but wasn't the author specifically. So he had a connection, he just wasn't the one writing.
Oh, okay. So, with the hidden codes in the site, which of those was interesting to you?
I will say again, pull up a chair. We got some. They used about 3 different. They used 3 different ciphers that already had existed during the duration of the show. And the hint that tells you which cipher that you need to use for the end credits code is actually said backwards in the theme song.
I'll do that one though.
The first and one that most people spring to is actually the Caesar cipher, which they do 3 letters back for the Caesar cipher. This is the code that's used for the first half of season 1 and still gets used occasionally for ciphers even to this day. Yeah, the A1Z26 cipher, which that's standard. That's actually a standard cipher. Just 1 is A and 26 is Z, etc. These ones will show up occasionally in season 1 and don't appear in season 2 right away. Season 2 changes things up by using a much more complex cipher that requires you to actually comb through the episodes to look for the keyword needed to solve the cipher. My favorite example of this is Northwest Mansion Mystery. Its cipher is hidden in an outshot of the mansion, and it's the keyword creepy. They put the keyword creepy in front of an outshot of a haunted mansion. Subtle.
What does creepy both mean?
Essentially, it is used to tell you how many spaces you need to move the letters in order to solve the cipher. I because of how complicated that cipher was, I have not been able to master it. The Caesar cipher came much easier to me than the other two ciphers.
The PP cipher reveal, if you don't know.
Most of the time in season one, it's small stuff. Like the first episode cipher is just welcome to Gravity Falls. But most of the time, these codes can be used to uncover some codes and mysteries, like the Stan is not what he seems code that showed up to make us question Stan. There are a couple that just make you question the main villain is always watching? Joy.
Okay.
As well as adding in codes and ciphers, may I add a touch of backwards messaging?
Sure.
They didn't just use it in the theme song. They used it occasionally throughout the series to represent a connection to the main antagonist. A good old triangle boy over there, Bill Cipher.
How does Bill Cipher play into the hidden code in ciphering?
Well, he adds his own coded language into the mix that I am actually currently trying to figure out how to solve it. Sometimes written in the journal entries in Journal 3 are codes that are written in some made-up language. It is a language that is used by Bill occasionally according to the lore. Solving it will unlock anything from information that Bill has to a Rick and Morty crossover. Everything crosses over with each other.
Okay.
It's not even the only Rick and Morty reference that's been seen. There's at least five.
Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you would feel like Bill Cipher being the one behind both of the ciphers is important.
Most of the time, the ciphers are supposed to have some connection to the episode, and some of them even go further. The one cipher most people remember is a cipher used in the final episode, which started up the ARG of locating the real-life statue of Bill Cipher that Alex Hirsch actually chose to hide. And it took fans about 2 to 3 weeks to solve everything?
Oh, that's good.
The fandom is insane. Like, they figured out the twist of who the author was a year before Alex Hirsch even finished season 2. Well, but they figured it out before season 1 ended, so they took a year hiatus to actually, you know, drop the leak, prepare season 2, do some shorts in between seasons 1 and 2, and continue advertising Gravity Falls.
Okay.
Man, the fandom is insane. The most recent ARG connected to the Book of Bill, fans cracked that in less than a month.
Well, I mean, he is doing the ciphers that are pretty easy to pick up.
The ARG is actually a website where you put in codes that are connected to the show canonically, and thus you have to find the codes yourself by searching through the show and the lore. Thus, it's called thisisnotawebsite.com.
Uh-huh.
When this book released led you to a countdown of I think it was 7 days when it initially started, and then it jumped up to 10 days when they had some technical difficulties. The current version that's out is the one that you can still access and type codes into just for fun now. Although fans are apparently begging for more information. They think there's more.
Oh. So on the website, how many codes and the cycles do people actually had to play with?
To give you context of how many that were found, in a weekend, fans found about 324 codes. In a weekend.
Any more?
There's a set of responses that are connected to each other that unlock some of the exclusive art that was made for the Book of Bill. But for the most part, the codes can do minor stuff like decorate the lab. If you type in Mabel, you might get information on how they defeat Bill Cipher. If you type in Stan and then click on it 7 times, get information about a being more powerful than Bill Cipher, who is just an axolotl. You get a ton of information about what happened after the show, and where this ARG falls canonically has left fans stunned. Oh. Because no one can confidently say when.
Oh.
Especially when someone's VA wants to join in on the fun and drop some hints saying that it might be Dipper being the one typing in the codes.
What is your favorite code that you like?
My favorites?
Yeah.
Like episode, character?
You have a favorite code that you like cracking?
I can list my favorites. I can list my favorites real quickly. The favorite episode, I'm going to say season one is probably going to be either Double Dipper or Tourist Trap. Those are two good episodes that are hilarious to watch. Season two, I'm going to give it to Northwest Mansion Mystery or Weird Begin Part 3/Technique Part 4 because they had to split it up into four parts. Incredibly fun episodes. They can leave you with some nightmares, but it's worth it in the end.
Okay.
Favorite character? The character I spent $20 on a plush to use for a cosplay. Dipper Pines. Which I hate saying this because I was 12 when I first started watching the show. I had a crush on this guy when I was his age.
So, let's go back to the male worker that was so interesting.
That would probably be the continuity. It wasn't the first Western cartoon to do continuity. It was one of the few ones that Disney did that took the continuity seriously.
Who's the character in the shop? It's not Wendy, but the other worker.
Seuss?
Yes. What's his role in Toad's disciple?
He is the handyman of the shack and is incredibly loyal to Grunkle Stan, as well as loyal and oftentimes can get protective of Dipper and Mabel. You can think of him like an older brother to the Pines twins, keeping an eye on them and even helping them get around town since he's the one with the truck.
So he's enabling them to solve the...
Yep, and because he's a local in Gravity Falls, having been born and raised in Gravity Falls, unlike most of our main characters, he has a good amount of information as to how the town works.
How does the town work when it's continuity?
That is because it all takes place over the course of a summer vacation, and we can confirm that the events take place chronologically, except for... I think they said at least two episodes are considered not canon or have events in them that are not on the timeline. Ironically, the two episodes that have them are multi-storied. They tell three stories. At least one, if not none of the stories mentioned are canon. Only one is implied to be canon.
I don't see.
Which only confirms one thing. I am never going to find those truth-telling teeth.
Where they will be.
If you find the truth-telling teeth and then put those teeth in someone's mouth, they have the inability to lie. So they have to constantly tell the truth.
So if you do it with you, that can be very effective.
If I had those teeth in, I would not be hiding spoilers.
No. Inability to not lie. But if I didn't ask about that spoiler, you didn't actually have to share.
That depends on if the person wants to be spoiled about the show. I mean, it is only like 41 to 42 episodes, and all the episodes are on Disney Plus. And before you ask, did the show end abruptly because Disney said no to a third season? No, it did not. Alex Hirsch didn't want to do a third season. He's interested in doing a movie, but he did not want to do another season. He ended it at two, and that's where he's going to stay.
Why not a third season?
The fans have been asking him for one, but I think it was because of how exhausting the seasons were. If you listen to the commentaries, the DVD commentaries for these episodes, he is complaining a bit about how much work he does. Like, there's an episode in season two where it's like, I wrote this episode in 48 hours. Here it is.
Okay.
Only for one question, how in the long run were you able to do that? Also, go take a vacation.
So it started in 2012 and officially ended what year?
It was June 2012 to February 2016.
With two seasons? The year hiatus.
It had a year hiatus. It was a planned year hiatus, which really doesn't help when the final episode of season one ends on a cliffhanger.
Well, cliffhanger though is still good to get the tension back to the show for the next season.
I think they did. I think the cliffhanger might be done because I don't think it was approved that they were getting a second season yet. They were able to do. The second season was greenlit, obviously, and they were allowed to do shorts in between the year hiatus between seasons.
So the show started in 2012. When did the show end?
They technically never really officially stopped. They technically have the ability to make more. It's just a matter of if Disney wants to make more.
Definitely.
I kind of hope they do.
What was the last airing of the last season? What year was that?
The last ones I can clearly recall is Fixing It with Seuss, which was shortly before the first season, which was shortly before the second season. They would be like, inside a commercial break in Disney XD, they would put these shorts in. And they still have codes for you to find.
Gotcha.
At least the Dipper one had, had something that would be connected to season two. Yay.
Did the shorts give much continuity to the franchise, or just a little content?
The problem is the shorts have not been 100% acknowledged outside of the shorts. Always the events that unfolded within them don't really make that many appearances outside of them being shorts. Like, if they show the journal in the shorts and show a journal entry, it's in the journal. There's one that does it. It's for the hide behind. So it's weird that that one might have taken place during another day in the summer vacation, but it is over the course of a summer, so could happen. It could just have been a one-off story that they just didn't have enough time to fill a full 22 minutes.
Oh, okay. So a little bit of the shorts just play as a filler content, maybe related to plot, depending on the canon, depending on the continuity.
Yes. But most of the time, they're just made to fill time. They're just made to keep fans interested in Gravity Falls during that year hiatus. The most recent thing I think connected to Gravity Falls that was made outside of Gravity Falls was a How Not to Draw episode that featured Grunkle Stan and Bill Cipher.
Oh.
And fans saw one thing in the episode and they're like, oh, it's that season three. It means we're getting another season, right? For season three of How Not to Draw instead.
Oh.
That's the fandom for you. It's sees one little thing and they freak out about it being possible and then
fans are weird sometimes.
Hey, we gotta have a little fun with the shows. You should see what the fans have done with the alternative universes, the ships. I don't know if there's been any ship wars, but the fans really know how to keep the show going with outside content.
We have to worry about too much.
I think it's our way of keeping it alive. To the point where people who do know when the birthday of the Pines twins, which is August 31st, they will put tweets out about the twins' birthday, estimating what they would look like in this day and age. Because they were born in 1999. They are 1 year older than me. I am old.
Oh. Maybe that? They care that much.
Let's say they'd be 25. I think last October, I got to see what they would look like as 25-year-olds. Not bad.
People would just put a character's birthday out there. That usually would do what they would look like now. That's weird.
I think sometimes I think when they want to do something like that, they do like age progression, a general age progression. Sometimes they use the VAs. Since I don't think I have found a pair of VAs that resemble the characters they're voicing more than Dipper and Mabel's VAs. You walk up to Jason Ritter, the voice actor of Dipper, and he can geek out about his own show more than you probably could.
That's good.
He loves it.
What's the Zodiac about?
Ah, the Zodiac. This would flash at the end of the theme song every single time, even during Weirdageddon when they decided, let's go make a new theme song. It was initially not supposed to mean anything when they first came up with it, but then they decided, let's use it. I think the number was 12 symbols on the zodiac that represented a different character. In the show. The standard one, you got some standard ones that show up. That will show up, especially in terms of side characters.
Oh, cool.
Some of the symbols are easy to identify. Like there's the six fingered one, just like the one on the journal. the representing the author. So the author is a part of the Zodiac. There's the shooting star, which is Mabel's signature sweater in the first episode. A pine tree is on Dipper's hat. The question mark is actually on Seuss. It's on his employee shirt. So he's the question mark. Grockle Stan has a symbol on his fez, which is also on the Zodiac as well. The other symbols are represented by characters that were either a foe, that were either foes or not 100% associated with the twins until the twins were introduced into their lives. Very interesting. Say interesting that they have to be the connection to the twins changing with the characters makes them realize, oh, I belong on the Zodiac.
So the mystery solved of the Zodiac, quote unquote, reveal.
We actually do not know. They show us the Zodiac. They show us the characters that would be on the Zodiac. Just before the Zodiac can trigger, something has to mess it up. To this day, we have no idea what the Zodiac had intended to do for the characters, other than potentially defeat Bill Cipher, which we don't even know if that could have done it.
So there's a potential for a new movie, but the Zodiac is the missing plot hole behind that.
If you're talking about the movie, the finale did introduce some ideas that could be used for a movie. You could do Stan and his brother, who we learn about in the series, they go to the Arctic to explore something paranormal that's been spotted. Or we get a see you next summer at the end of the series, which implies, oh, they go back to Gravity Falls next year. Is that going to be the movie?
I still think the Zodiac kind of looks better and more interesting. The Arctic is kind of like a side adventure that's not really necessarily all there.
I'm sorry, what?
They can tell the Arctic adventure in shorts if they want to.
They could. They also could make them in the side story known as Chibi Tiny Tales. Strange that of all properties they have not touched in the Chibi Tiny Tales, they have not touched Gravity Falls. They'll touch Phineas and Ferb first before they touch Gravity Falls and Chibi and making Chibi Tiny Tales. That is insane. Then again, it is Phineas and Ferb, and I don't think we can compete with Phineas and Ferb since that's coming back for two more seasons.
Yeah, less mystery, more episodic.
It's also easier to do reruns since, oh, the timeline makes no sense.
Well, true. Well, what is your possible theory that you write for the movie?
I feel like the movie can take place a year or two after the events of the original series. Like, we get a chance to catch up. Both the ending of the show and the Book of Bill that was released do hint at Bill Cipher possibly able to make a return. So, your big bad was not 100% defeated at the end of the series. Well, let's gather everyone up. Let's go beat him again.
True.
Our hopes of a movie are technically on hold because Alex Hirsch is currently in a contract with Netflix, so he has to wait till that's done before we can go back to Disney to pitch the movie.
Well, he's in a contract. Why don't you do the movie on Netflix?
I don't think Netflix would let him leave. Would let him leave his contract, which has him making a show, which is currently on hiatus. So we have to wait till that show was done or gets canceled. Until then, he's actually allowed with help from Disney to release products that are connected to Gravity Falls, but not a full series, like the Book of Bill.
Well, technically, because he's on a contract, he can still produce something.
The ARG, the ARG and the Book of Bill, I think, are showing us what he wants to do with this concept. I think this shows that he still wants to do mystery ciphers and codes and give us information about the characters. He just rather the fans figure it out on their own rather than him saying, okay, this is all you need to know. Go at it. Instead, it's like, I'll give you this and you can go find the rest. It's like he's giving us a treasure map and it's leading us to a treasure trove of, ooh, what's it? Ooh, what's this about divorced parents?
So with the show being where it was, where the show is now, where do you think the contribution to the show lies?
I think that would have to be how Mask was. It was the number one best animated show before its second season even started. So it was pretty much, it was pretty popular. They were making pine tree hats. They were making pine tree hats. They were making maple sweaters. They released Journal 3 like months after the finale ended, and that is still selling 8 years later.
Yeah, I remember my brother watching Gravity Falls all the time. It was the one show I didn't want to watch, and he kept watching. It was the one show I told him, no, don't watch it while I'm here. Or I'll leave the room and I can't stand it. I don't know why I can't stand it. It didn't make any sense to me. It seemed been off every episode.
That's it. Are those episodes you can start immediately, that you can get introduced to the show with?
I'm
not sure I was able to hear that completely.
I don't think I introduced the show properly. I think I was like seeing out of action different episodes here and there that didn't make any sense.
Introduction episode. Any of the first 7 episodes is probably would be a good way to get introduced. I think I got introduced to it with the 4th episode because the 5th episode was getting ready to premiere. So I had been introduced to it with within that range. Tourist Trap the pilot episode obviously is a good one to start with. Probably don't, if you're going to show some, don't show them the original pilot. Show them the show and then show them the original pilot.
Gotcha. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Especially now that we have a high-res version of the pilot. We did not have a high-res version of the pilot until the Disney Television Network leak that happened back in April. So now you can watch it in 4D. Well, in HD.
Where's your favorite aspect of Gravity Falls?
It has to be the ongoing mysteries. They had mysteries that the characters in the show had to solve, and the fun part is the audience got to try to solve these mysteries too. They'd leave hints for the mysteries in the show themselves for the audience to solve, as well as the characters. In fact, they point... McGuckin was the author of the Journals episode. They pointed out literally every single hint that the fans had pointed out to think, oh, he was the author of the Journals. He wasn't? It's like, well, we butter them up. It's like, butter them up and curveball.
Who was the author?
That is interesting because this is revealed to us in a 2-parter, and the second part is like 20, and the second part is longer than an average episode. But it is Grunkle Stan's twin brother who was sent into a portal 30 years before the events of the series and had been in a realm known as the Nightmare Realm for 30 years until Stan could get the portal back up and running and so we can see who the author was. I'll give the fans credit. We were close.
That's cool.
And by that I mean, who is who again? Because someone had to go steal a name.
That's true.
Let's say, because Grunkle Stan was using his brother's name, which is Stanford, and his original name was Stan Lee.
Oh.
Good luck trying to figure out how to write them in fan fictions, because you could just use Ford. That's what he goes by. Yeah, and I'm still surprised they got J.K. Simmons to voice Great Uncle Ford, aka Get Me, Adventures of Spider-Man!
Well, true. So, as we take this to a close, what is a concluding factor that you want to give people about Gravity Falls?
I say, let's not let this show die. This show was childhood building, and a lot of people have found friends and projects that they are very much interested in after Gravity Falls ended. The proof of this was Amphibia and the Owl House, which some fans call those spiritual successors of Gravity Falls. So the legacy of Gravity Falls is going to continue living on, even if all we're getting from the show is show, books, and ARGs. Long live Gravity Falls.
True. I think with me, Gravity Falls will be one of those great televised animated TV shows that would be consider the animated series instead of a cartoon in some aspects. And with that definition, it will fit pretty closely to the fan community, people like it being more than just a show. It inspired so many people to do so many things that it actually became something more.
Definitely. To the point that some film schools are using episodes of Gravity Falls to help teach how to write episodes.
Oh, interesting. So storytelling is being examined through a deeper lens, the case study.
Yes.
All right, well, as we conclude this episode of Exploring Gravity Falls and its plotline, where can they find you and all that good stuff?
These people can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Shapeshift 16, uppercase the first S. I am going to be, since I am still on the Gravity Falls fixation, I probably will be posting art based off AUs and maybe adding something from the AUs.
Interesting. But yeah, for this episode, special thank you for being here. It was very delightful to have the mysteries of Gravity Falls falling into play, and you being the one to set the foundation to set it straight and get the mystery solved.
You're welcome.
So with that, thank you for being here.
Bye, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.